Well, Radio Network certainly sends you greetings from Mount Vernon, Texas this morning. I'm Ryan Smithy, joined by Chip Horton.
Good morning.
And we certainly send our greetings. Hope that you are having a good morning and ready to sit down with us and study through God's Word as we pick up the pace a little bit as we look through these these chapters. I warned you at the first of the year that we would have to move a little faster to get through the Old Testament, and we begin to see that even with the life of Abraham. We're spending 4 days on the life of Abraham, and we could spend, you know, easily take 2 weeks or more talking about this man that was such an example in so many areas of his life, so many lessons we learned through these chapters, but we move rapidly, and there may be something you're thinking, oh, we wish you had touched more on that, or let us know those things. There, we have a little area at the end of the year. We might be able to revisit some things if there's questions or gaps that you find that we have left. But we will try to give us a good overview, if you will, as the account moves along this morning. We'll be looking at Genesis 15 through Genesis 19. And certainly, again, powerful chapters through there, a lot of material. Try to hit some highlights that are recorded out of those chapters. And so if you have opportunity, log into the chat box with us this morning, tgrn.org. Click that big Listen Live button and then look at the bottom of the page where you can enter your name there and click Enter. You'll be in with us, and maybe you have comments or questions. I'm turning that over to Chip this morning. He does a good job of keeping up with that for us and chime in there as appropriate. I think we've got Jody in with us this morning, maybe some others that will be joining us shortly. Also, before we get going, I will take just a minute. We had talked about how through the end of the year, that first of the new year, there wasn't a whole lot going on, and we're firing up again. I do want to let you know of a gospel meeting lectureship that's coming up at the Nesbitt Church of Christ in Nesbitt, Mississippi, Friday, January 27th through Sunday, January 29th. And they're looking this year, how did we get the Bible? And so looking back through that, certainly be a great study. I have no doubt looking forward to being with them this year with Tolstar recording that.
Oh, cool.
And so... The added benefit of that is we'll have those lessons here soon on the network. Kind of throw that one at you, Chip.
Yeah, we got our fourth annual Make Me a Servant workshop coming up on February the 3rd and the 4th, especially the 3rd, as I was reminded publicly Sunday. There is a youth activity that begins 7 o'clock that night with Michael Light. Leading the thoughts about lighting the fire, and then continuing Saturday morning, starting out at 10 o'clock. Clay Bond kicks off the morning. There are classes throughout the day. There's a barbecue lunch that's going to be served at 12, and then we'll end up with John McCormack back in the assembly hall with everybody present there at 3 o'clock. So if you have the opportunity to come, make sure and be a part of that starting on February the 3rd.
And that's been a well-received event the last 2-3 years, mm-hmm. And certainly hope that you'll be able to be with us, know that you'd be benefited by it. Any of these events you want more details on, certainly email us at office@tgrn.org, and we'll try to provide that. Quickly, February 11th, the Carriage Oaks Church of Christ in Bossier City, Louisiana, will have a Bible class workshop for the ladies, and this is a session that's hosted by T. McCorder and April Meacham, and they have done a number of sessions in this area, so you may want to visit with them and check that out. And finally, the BCS Church of Christ is having a Young Men Development Conference, Quit You Like Men, on March 12th through the 19th. Of this year. First time they're firing that up, and I believe about age 18 to 24 is the age range they're looking for. I'll let you know about that primarily because they are starting their signups even now, and search for them on Facebook to find out more information about that.
And also, remember, guys, we're having our men's breakfast this Saturday at 8 o'clock, and our world-famous meat gravy that's served annually by Bo Wofford is going to be on tap. So make sure and be here for that. We've already received calls from quite a few people that are planning on coming. So we look forward to another great attendance as we had last year. So look forward to that this Saturday at 8 o'clock. Be right here at the Mount Vernon Church of Christ.
Great, great. With that, let's get right into our study this morning. As we said, we would love to spend more time here, but we'll try to use it wisely as we can. In Genesis chapter 15 is where we will get a start. And it begins, well, I simply titled it, a Promise Renewed, that once again God is going to assure Abraham. If you think about it, Genesis 15 and verse 1 starts after these things.
Mm-hmm.
What has just happened is the rescue of Lot. He's been carried away, and Abraham has taken his army and his force to go after Lot, to rescue him, to bring back those, if you will, spoils of war. And Abraham comes back, and other than the tithes that he will give to Melchizedek, Abraham doesn't keep of those things of himself. He doesn't, if you will, take that payment for himself, not wanting anyone to say that they were the ones that had gotten Abraham rich. And if you will, Chip, read for us there Genesis 15 and verse 1.
After these things, the word of the Lord came unto Abram in a vision, saying, Fear not, Abram, I am thy shield and thy exceeding great reward.
All right. That's significant to me, just that idea there. You know, Lot's faced trouble. You've gone off to war to defend him. And maybe it's right for Abraham to be wondering, what physical battles lay ahead? Maybe also you have here the idea of Abraham giving back those spoils of war. I'm not keeping these things for myself. And God comes to him, to me, with that voice of reassurance. And he says, I am, as we have it in the King James, really remember that am there is italicized. So you have I, thy shield. I'm the one that is protecting you. I'm the one that's going to watch over you. I'm the one that's brought you here and is going to fulfill my promises to you. And this chapter is going to be a reminder of that fulfillment. But then also that wonderful idea, I am thy shield, and I am also thy exceeding great reward. The idea here that God is the one that's going to reward Abraham, both in this life and in the life to come, as one who is a faithful servant. And I couldn't help but think about that as a fitting theme, really, for the next few chapters we're going to look at. Because throughout these chapters, what we're going to see is God is a rewarder of the righteous and a punisher of the wicked. We see that through the life of Abraham, and then also as you get over into Sodom and Gomorrah. And so, Abraham, I am thy reward. I'm the one that's going to bless thee. And you remember, and I'm sorry, we're going to have to leave most of this reading up to you to look back through these chapters. Put a little plug there. Visit our website and look around. It appears in a few different places, or go down to the on-demand section to Mornings for the Master, and there is a link for our 2017 schedule. And maybe you can look ahead and read ahead for the day as to where we're going. But if you'll read through chapter 15, you're going to see Abraham has some questions. You've promised me to bless me. You're going to give me all these things. But how are they going to come? I'm an old man already, and I have no descendant. How is this going to come? Is it through Eliezer, the steward of my house? I mean, he's the only one that I can leave all of this to. And God is going to assure him that, no, you are going to have a son. You're going to have a descendant. And in the midst of that, we get to see Abraham's great faith again. And so, Chip, maybe if you would, if you're there in Genesis 15, what about verse 4 through 6?
And behold, the word of the Lord came unto him, saying, This shall not be thine heir, But he that shall come forth out of thine own bowels shall be thine heir. And he brought him forth abroad and said, Look now toward heaven, and tell the stars, if thou be able to number them. And he said unto him, So shall thy seed be. And he believed in the Lord, and he counted it to him for righteousness. And he said unto him, I am the Lord that brought thee out of the Ur of the Chaldees to give thee this land to inherit it.
You know, I really want to focus on verse 6 there, some verses that stood out at me as you go through these chapters, and their significance there, because, again, Abraham is without child. The expectation of having a child is quickly leaving them as they are moving into their older age. And yet here God is still saying, I'm going to give you a descendant. I'm going to make you the father of nations. You are going to have a great number of descendants. And notice the faith of Abraham, verse 6. He believed in the Lord, and he counted it to him for righteousness. Mm-hmm. Abraham believed God. Mm-hmm. There are points of Abraham's life that we can look and we can see a weak faith. We can see that he stumbled from time to time. But overall, his life is characterized as a man of faith, as a man that followed God. I think earlier we've looked at Abraham as a friend of God. Mm-hmm. Here we see that idea that Abraham believed God. It was counted to him for righteousness. Now, that particular verse is going to be important as you go into the New Testament, mm-hmm. as we make application here, because Paul's going to bring that back up in the book of Romans, in Romans chapter 4, particularly verse 3, also Romans chapter 4, verse 10 and 11. Mm-hmm. Paul's going to look at that, and he's going to remind them, when was Abraham counted righteous? We haven't received the covenant of circumcision. That's not for another two chapters here. But Abraham was counted righteous before he was circumcised. Mm-hmm. And so looking at these Jews that want to have such confidence in Abraham, he's reminding them, Abraham was counted righteous because of his faithfulness to God, not because of a physical act, not because of that particular covenant that would bring Abraham's family through Isaac into this covenant, mm-hmm. but because he was faithful before God. And that's going to be a challenge that's given then. Do you have the faith of Abraham? The Jews might look and say, but we're seeds of Abraham. He said, I understand you're physical descendants of Abraham, but are you spiritual descendants of Abraham? Do you have the faith of Abraham? And that's what I want to be today. I want to be a child of Abraham in the sense that I have his faith, mm-hmm. that I hear what God says, and I will do it. And that's what that's certainly what I see in his life. Mm-hmm. He's going to be told, even here in Genesis 15, verse 13 and 14, there are going to be struggles. You're going to be, your descendants are going to be a stranger in a land that's not theirs. You're going to serve them. They're going to afflict you. But I'm going to bring up a great nation out of them, and foreshadowing their Egypt that is to come. And Abraham, all these things are going to happen. They're not going to happen. You're not going to see the fruit of them. These things will not come to pass in your life, but even after verse 16 particularly mentions the fourth generation, verse 13 has mentioned these 400 years of affliction, you know, all these things are going to come to pass later, and yet Abraham believes God. And certainly you could look back to that great chapter of faith, Hebrews chapter 11, and see that commendation of verse 9, Hebrews 11, verse 9, by faith he sojourned in the land of promise as in a strange country. You'll receive it one day, but you're going to be a stranger in that land. And then also verse 13, these all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, mm-hmm. and were persuaded of them, embraced them, and confessed they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. And I look back and see a people there that said, I don't see how. I don't understand it yet. I'm not going to see the fulfillment, but I believe God's going to keep his word. Mm-hmm. And the great chapter of faith is God restores that promise to them.
I'm always saddened when I read particular things that show what many people have assumed or stated to be so that are absolutely not so from verse 6.
Mm-hmm.
You see this saved by faith only idea that comes out of verse 6, and people say, well, I want to be saved like Abraham, mm-hmm. and things of that nature. But I would certainly, you know, even to the points that you have already made, suggest that which lies within the Hebrew writings, Hebrews mm-hmm. 11 of verse 6, he's a rewarder of those that diligently seek him. And so it requires something on my part, not just a simple belief. That is a great place to begin. We must, as Jesus said in so many places, like John 8 and verse 24, but it requires something.
Mm-hmm. And that view forgets. You're right. Abraham hasn't undergone circumcision. He hasn't entered into that covenant. But you forget that Abraham has already been a faithful follower, a doer of God's will. Even the book of Hebrews is going to remind us, when he was called, he went out not knowing where he was going, basically. Mm-hmm. God said go, he got up and went. And that was the faith of Abraham. We've seen it time again already in his life, and we'll continue to see that. And so some great lessons are found for us there in Genesis 15. But let's move along. Genesis chapter 16. You know, you have that reminder of that promise, and I have no doubt that brings that freshly into Abraham and Sarah's mind once again. God said he's going to bless us with a son. And I titled chapter 16, Man's Plans Fall Short. Here you can read through this chapter, and you're going to find that Abraham, or particularly Sarah, is going to create within their mind, they're going to concoct a plan whereby they think that they can usher God's plans along. And that certainly always puts us into a dangerous position when we think that we can outplan God, when we think that somehow we have to help him along. And yet that seems to be in Sarah's mind, that she's thinking to herself, I can't bear a son.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe I could give Abraham, my husband, my handmaid Hagar, verse 1 and verse 2, and by him we can obtain children. And so she presents that plan to Abraham. They carry out that relationship, and out of that union as such is going to be born a son. Ishmael is going to come. But he's not the son of promise. God still has something else in mind. And so, to me, Ishmael stands for a son that instead of bringing joy, brings sorrow. Their plan, their idea was, here's the son that we can have through Hagar. And remember, it's Sarah that comes and presents this plan before God at the beginning of verse 2. She said unto Abram. And yet what happens? Well, it causes strife. It causes sorrow. That after the birth of this child is conceived, Sarah is going to go back unto Abraham, verse 5, and see, my wrong be upon thee. Now there's going to be strife. Sarah and Hagar aren't going to get along because they've twisted the plans of God. There's going to be some conflict here, some strife, some discontent anyway, between Abram and Sarai. You have strife because here we've gone against what God has planned, and they're going to learn that. But it's also going to continue to bring strife to some degree, at least conflict. And the verse that I would point out or highlight here is verse 12, that Hagar and Ishmael are going to be sent away. God is going to appear unto Hagar, comfort her, that yes, he is with her. But as he speaks of Ishmael, verse 12, he says, he will be a wild man. His hand will be against every man, and every man's hand against him. He shall dwell in the presence of all of his brethren. Well, that's basically that history. You follow them through the Ishmael and his descendants. The Ishmaelites are going to be a nomadic people. They are going to dwell there in that land, but they're always going to be that kind of roaming type of people, not really having a settled home. They're going to be ones who aren't going to be destroyed, but they're not really living at peace with others or others with them. And so there is strife that is brought out of that conflict. And instead of answering God's plan, they have, in a sense, frustrated it. They have caused troubles for themselves that they're going to continue to deal with. Now, out of that, again, looking to the New Testament, Paul's going to use that relationship as an allegory, he says, there in Galatians chapter 4. Galatians chapter 4, verse 22 and following. And he's going to point, and he's reminding us, we are sons in that allegory. We are the sons, as Christians, of the free woman. We are the sons of promise. And so he will use this example as a great teaching opportunity. But it comes about because man tried to intervene into God's plan. And that's the highlight for me of chapter 16.
Yeah, every place you look to in the Bible are famous passages that we look to so many times where man tries to do it on his own, Jeremiah 10:23, where we try to do things that we assume God would be happy with, mm-hmm. Leviticus 10, Nadab and Abihu. These things that we assume he'll accept, with Cain's offering. Every time that man puts his foot in the way of God's plan, disaster follows, hate mm-hmm. follows, disagreement follows. And, now, under this new covenant, as we strive to live, even by Matthew 7 and verse number 12, when we step aside from that particular golden rule, as it's been titled, problems follow single time. And so here's just an instance where we get to look inside of, this particular plan. And I know it was hard to maybe understand. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, how can I have children at this advanced age? But again, even as you would see him go up the mountain in chapter 22, mm-hmm. his faith is growing, and this is one of his points where he learns to grow mm-hmm. in faith.
Mm-hmm. I like that word you used, and it's a caution to us, assumption.
Yeah.
How many today have assumed, well, surely God would be happy with, and you fill in the blank, mm-hmm. Because it pleases them, because it makes sense in their minds. That's what they decide to pursue and follow after. And we need to be a people like Abraham that will stop and say, what is God's will? Mm. And, he ought to serve as that example, both positively and then negatively. There are times he did that excellently in his life, and there's times like this that seem to show a kink, if you will, a little point of weakness in which he needed to grow. And so after you do it your way, God comes back, chapter 17, and now we have a new covenant. God is going to give Abraham a charge that I believe should be imitated in our lives as well. And we're going to find that in Genesis 17, particularly here in verse 1 and 2. You there for us, Chip?
And when Abram was 90 years old and 9, the Lord appeared to Abram and said unto him, I am the Almighty God. Walk before me, and be thou perfect. And I will make my covenant between me and thee, and I will multiply thee exceedingly.
All right. So what a charge. Here's Abraham. You've been faithful. But Abraham, once again, I'm going to charge you. Walk before me, and be perfect, be complete. Is that not what God asked, ultimately, really, of everyone? Going back to the garden of Genesis 1 and 2, God wants Adam and Eve, walk with me. Here's the simple instructions that I've set before you. Even after the garden, God is systematically going through here, striving to renew that relationship with man. I want you to walk with me. Mm-hmm. Here in the patriarchal age, he wants man to walk with him. in the law of Moses. I want you to walk with me and be my people, and I'll be your God. In the New Testament, God wants people to walk with me. Walk in the light that's been revealed, 1 John 1 and verse 5. That's what he desires of us. Will we walk with him and be perfect or be complete in him? But right along with that charge comes another promise there that we see in verse 2. If you walk with me, I'm going to fulfill all those wonderful promises I've given to you and above your imagination. It's certainly something we see in the life of Abraham, because he could have never seen how things would unfold in his life. And so as part of this covenant that's going to be made here within this chapter, we'll highlight verse 5, that here his name is going to be changed, no longer be called Abram, but Abraham, for a father of many nations have I made thee. And so we change from Abram, high or exalted father, to Abraham, a father of multitude or multitudes. Along with that, you can drop down into verse 10. God is going to give a sign of this covenant. You change your name, you give him a sign of the covenant that is circumcision. You shall keep this covenant between me and you and your seed after you, that every male child among you will be circumcised. And so he is given that instruction. And here, as he continues to speak, verse 15 will highlight that Sarah is going to be changed from Sarai, is now going to be called Sarah. I don't find quite as much distinction in that name. Sarai was my princess. Sarah seemingly still means princess. And so perhaps there's more significance that's lost there to us, but her name will be changed right alongside Abraham. And also he will again promise, verse 16, that a child is going to come of this relationship. A son is going to be born unto you of Sarah, and she's going to be a mother of nations, and kings of people shall be of her. You know, here, even as you trace this down, here you talk about the power of one and the power of Isaac, but think about out of Isaac even is going to come a great host of people. And you just trace on down even to the sons of Jacob. And you think there of the 12 tribes that would form out of that family. You think of the kings that are going to rule over the people. I mean, there is a great lineage that is going to come forth out of these people. And here, even Abraham is looking at this, and he recognizes, I'm almost 100 years old. I mean, verse 1 has told us he's 99. He mentions here his age of being 100. And, you know, Sarah's 90. There's this shock almost, I think. But God has renewed this covenant. He's given him that sign. Chip, I'd like for you maybe to look for us at his response. I think we can grab that in verse 23.
23 says, Abraham took Ishmael, his son, and all that were born in his house, and all that were bought with his money, every male among the men of Abraham's house, and circumcised the flesh of their foreskin in the selfsame day, as God had said unto them.
Okay, and so what I wanted to highlight there in verse 23, certainly this chapter 17, the covenant, those verses we've highlighted, the change of names, the signs of that covenant that they were going to dwell under. But Abraham's response in verse 23, the very same day after God leaves him, he takes his whole house, and he goes out and he fulfills the instructions of God.
Right.
Here again was that great man of faith. He's wasting no time in accomplishing what God had instructed. And there's no question. There's no delay. There's no, well, let's think about this. Abraham goes and he does this. Mm-hmm. And again, if you want to learn from the life of Abraham, certainly take that as an example. Are we willing to sit down even today and study God's Word and come to the conclusion, I know what God wants of me, and to go and do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the example, certainly, that I see there. I would also maybe highlight the idea here that this was a physical sign of that covenant that is going to be passed down through these generations. It's going to be a continual reminder back to that covenant that had been made.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have that physical instruction today, but we could certainly look at Romans 2, 28 and 29, Galatians chapter 5, verse 6, also Galatians 6 and verse 16 will give you some points there that you can consider that it's not about the circumcision of the flesh, but it is about the circumcision of the heart. I'll read there Romans 2, verse 28 and 29. He is not a Jew which is one outwardly, neither is that circumcision which is outward in the flesh, but he is a Jew which is one inwardly. And circumcision is that of the heart and in the spirit and not in the letter, whose praise is of men and not of God. There's going to be an encouragement there for us to remember that we have come under a covenant with God. But it's not a physical marking that we're going to place within ourselves, but there should be a marking, as it were, of our hearts, that it is going to be cut, that we would follow after God. And so, again, I don't want to lose, these chapters are recorded for us as a history, but they're also recorded for us as great spiritual lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And we continue to see these throughout.
Hey, you talk about that being cut. You know, I'm certainly reminded, as most of our listeners probably are as well, of Acts chapter 2. You know, when they heard the preaching of that first gospel sermon, it says they were cut to the heart. And immediately, you know, we see response, you know. And so the great example that was shown in Abraham here was certainly even reflected in that response that we see on the day of Pentecost, and such should be the same today. You know, as James said, we need not just be hearers, but doers, you know. Mm-hmm. So when we hear that which is instructive and even, you know, rebuking to us, we should act upon it, you know, because it's for our benefit. Certainly, we see the benefit that Abraham would receive by this. And, you know, the questions that so many people have, you know, I can't imagine receiving an instruction like this, you know, that is certainly mm-hmm. new. You know, you talked about Noah and the idea of rain. What is rain, mm-hmm. you know, or whatever? And here, you want me to cut myself, you want me to cut everybody else in this idea that seems just completely off the wall, maybe, in our finite minds. But yet, he went ahead and did it anyway. Mm-hmm. And his great leadership shows, even as the chapter ends, all the men of his house.
Mm-hmm.
And so his leadership was prominent, and they followed his instructions to the T. Today, people want to argue about baptism.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, well, I just don't see how, well, you know, God has promised, Colossians chapter 2, that he will remove those transgressions. You know, if you will understand that he is in control, he has promised to do that. That's the operation of God. And, you know, again, I've said it, you know, silly in nature. If he said to wear a red T-shirt on every Tuesday in order to be saved, I'd do it. I wouldn't necessarily understand it.
Mm-hmm.
But God has set forth instructions, and we are to follow them just as faithfully as Abraham does here with such a command.
Right. Good point. Good point. And so that covenant is made. We advance a little here in time and shift really a little away from the story as such of Abraham and Sarah, the account, excuse me, of Abraham and Sarah, to begin focusing on the wickedness of Sodom and Gomorrah. And yet, I can't help but think, and I want to keep in the forefront of our minds in Genesis 18 and 19, what I'm learning the most about is God. I'm learning about his nature, and I'm learning about his character. And so chapter 18, entertaining angels and the mercy of God.
Mm.
Abraham is going to be in the plains of Mamre, Genesis 18 and verse 1, and he is going to see three men approaching unto him, And what I love about Abraham, and this point's going to be brought out in the New Testament, Abraham doesn't know who these are. I see no indication here to Abraham other than these are just three men that are approaching. And look at his response. His response is to jump up and prepare for them a great meal. He is going to, in many ways, it seems, go out of his way. Verse 5, I love it. He says, let me get you a morsel of bread. Let me just get you a little bit, almost of something to nibble on. And yet, what does he do? He runs into the tent in verse 6, and he's saying, I want you to get together this bread. He goes out and he fetches this this calf, and he gets butter and he gets milk. And I see Abraham here as a man of great hospitality, and one who was ready to help others. And perhaps, again, I don't know all of the details of how this has happened, if these men have startled Abraham, if they have just appeared, as it were, out of thin air, if in some sense they have approached unto him and he sees them appear in that fashion. But his readiness, before anything really has been said, to jump into action and to serve. And our minds need to attach Genesis 18 with Hebrews 13 as well. And Genesis chapter 13 and verse 2, we might even grab verse 1 and 2. The instruction is, let brotherly love continue. Hebrews 13 and verse 2, be not forgetful to entertain strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares. Abraham's going to learn that he is, as it were, entertaining angels. He's host. He is showing hospitality to angels and messengers of God. I don't know that he fully understands that yet until they deliver their message. And we talked about that some in the book of Hebrews. I don't necessarily think that idea there is that we are literally entertaining angels today. But looking back to Abraham's example, you don't know who that is that's standing next to you.
That's right.
But should you show him any less hospitality if he was just a man that was in need? And so let us be a hospitable people, because indeed he is later going to find. At least two of these are addressed as angels. That chapter 19 seemingly are the ones that go down into Sodom and deliver the message there to Lot and his family. They are angels. They are messengers of God. The third that stays behind with Abraham is addressed as Lord. And, you know, some will wonder, different degrees that people will go to, well, is this the second member of the Godhead in some physical form that has come to the earth? Is this just some other manifestation that God has given unto Abraham? Certainly some questions there that I think we can ask, but they have come with a divine message, and certainly understand the divine will, even as we're going to see at the end of this chapter, as Abraham talks with him. And so some form, if you will, of God's glory that's going to appear unto Abraham on this account. What we have before us, verse 10, these men have come with a message. And verse 10 is going to be the reminder, Sarah is going to have a son. And while they have shown great faith, Sarah, there in verse 10, is behind the door and laughs. This seems a marvelous message to her. In her old age, is she now indeed to have a son? I wonder. She is spoken jointly here in Hebrews 11 and verse 11 as those by, or excuse me, Hebrews 11:11, through faith, Sarah also received strength to conceive seed, was delivered of a child when she was past age, because she judged him faithful who promised. To what degree here Sarah believed God. She believed that he would fulfill his promise. Now, I think there is this, maybe this natural idea of almost impossibility. How can this be? This almost seems too great. And yet, I love, and I would highlight here, verse 14, this message that's going to come in response. And Genesis 18 and verse 14, is anything too hard for the Lord? And at the time appointed, I will return unto thee according to the time of life, and Sarah shall have a son. You can trust in the promise of God. So is anything too hard? Is anything impossible for God? And indeed, I think man, even today, needs to be reminded God is not bound by the limitation of what man considers possible. Man didn't dream up God's plan of salvation. Man didn't dream up even the hope of an eternal home in heaven. Those are promises of God. Man didn't dream up the plan of salvation as far as what God asks and instructs. Man didn't dream up the wonderful blessings even that God has given unto us. And so sometimes we can have very small minds in relation to what God can do and accomplish. And I think that's true even today, that sometimes we can sit and talk about the work of the church and other things and be very small-minded as to what is accomplishable instead of launching out, as it were, in faith, believing that all things in that sense and going forth and doing the work of the church is possible. Set forth and do the work that God has set set before us. I want to highlight one other thing there, and that's in Romans chapter 4. Romans chapter 4 and some words that I have loved. In verse 17 and following, and you can go through there and read some of this, but talking of Abraham that was going to be a father of nations, it's the idea of God and the power of God, that here he is the one that can call those things which be not as though they were, verse 17. Here is Abraham, who hoped against hope, or against hope believed in hope. The idea there that that I trust, even though earthly expectation was gone, that I would have a son, I still believed God, that I would become the father of nations. That he was not weak in faith, verse 19. But verse 20, he staggered not at the promise of God in unbelief, but was strong in faith, giving glory to God, and being fully persuaded, verse 21, that what he had promised he was also able to perform, and therefore it was imputed unto him for righteousness. Abraham had faith. He believed in God. And so they believed here these promises. Yes, it was a great thing. Yes, it was hard to believe in a sense, but they trusted in God, and indeed in the course of time here, they are going to have this son. And so that's the first half of the chapter. These messengers have appeared. They have shown great hospitality, and Abraham is going to receive this message that indeed now the promise of God is going to come true. You are going to have this son.
And even back to your Romans 4 reference, remember he was fully persuaded. And, you know, that may be the downfall of many today, whether in the church or out of the church, those that may not really be fully persuaded. And so when you see the blessing of great elders in a congregation like we have here that have a vision, they have an understanding of what God is able to do. And so if we'll just follow the pattern, right, Matthew 28, teach, baptize, continue to teach, and then repeat step A, you know, teach, baptize, continue to teach. If we'll just continue to follow that pattern, then everything else falls into place. My dad always says, if you'll take care of the pennies, the dollars take care of themselves. And the same thing is true with the logic that we find here. If you'll just follow the pattern, then God will take care of the rest, because he is faithful and just to keep his promises.
Mm.
Be fully persuaded.
Mm. Excellent lessons there again from his life. But then we get to learn again about Abraham. We get to learn about God in the pursuing last half of this chapter as well. Because now they will reveal to Abraham God's plan that he has come to destroy. He's going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah and the plains of the city. He asks, shall we hide from Abraham, verse 17, the thing that I do, because of who, in a sense, Abraham is. Verse 18, seeing that he's going to become a great and mighty nation, that all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him. Are we going to hide that which we are doing and accomplishing? But verse 19, Chip, I might have you read that for us, is certainly another one I would highlight out of this chapter.
For I know him, that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord, to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he has spoken of him.
Mm-hmm. Out of all the statements about Abraham, I know there's some great ones. He's called the friend of God. He's referenced here. His faith was counted unto him for righteousness. The one that I think always stands out in my mind is this one right here in Genesis 18 and verse 19. That God says, I know him. Mm-hmm. I know him, and I know what he's going to do. I know that he's going to command his children, his household after him. I know that he's going to be a cause, the impetus here for them to continue keeping the way of the Lord. I know that he's going to do justice and judgment, and I know that he's going to walk faithfully that I might continue to bless him.
Mm-hmm.
And that speaks a lot about Abraham, but I would present it to us as a charge in this sense. Does God know us?
Mm.
You know, that's said here of Abraham. I think about the wonderful commendation that God would give of Job even before Satan. Have you considered my servant Job? I know him. I know what he's going to do. And the challenge there to me is, what if we asked ourselves the question, does God know us? And maybe even further than that, how does God know us? Does he know I can trust Ryan Smithy? I know how he's going to react. I know what he's going to do, even in difficult situations. I know Chip Horton, that he's going to be faithful. Or does he look and he says, I know Susie Q. I don't expect that much. I mean, it's a sobering thought to think, what does God think about us? Does he know us as a steadfast, faithful, reliable, or does he know us as a weak one that wouldn't be able to stand up to the challenges of life? Does he know us as one that is not going to be faithful at all? I mean, how does he know us? Abraham has spoken of one here that was known of God in a very good way, and I want to be known of God in that way as well. But as we continue, the announcement is going to come that the cry, verse 20, of Sodom and Gomorrah has come up before God because of their sin that is very great and is very grievous. Notice here a few points that I find interesting. Verse 21, I am going down. We'll see whether they have done according. Is God quick to judge?
Mm-hmm.
There's a sense here in which I want to be careful, because God knows all things. I don't know that this isn't for our benefit and for Abraham's benefit, but God is saying, I will investigate. I will see the truth of the matter. I will examine the evidence and make a decision based on that evidence that is given. And so I'm going to go down to judge whether this thing is true or not, and I will know it. And so the two are going to go down toward Sodom. The one is going to stay here with Abraham. And we see a quality of God's great leaders now within Abraham, and it's a merciful attitude. Abraham is going to come and begins with this count of 50. You've said you're going to destroy Sodom, but let me just ask for a minute. What if there were 50 righteous people that could be found? Well, so what I want to highlight about Abraham is this idea of mercy, of love and compassion. We're going to see it again in Moses to a degree. You know, here even at times God will speak as he is ready to destroy the people, and Moses will plead on behalf of the people, have patience. Some of God's great leaders are going to have that characteristic. They care about the souls of the individuals, and I see that here within Abraham. I also see within this the righteousness and the mercy of God. Yes, I'm willing to spare. I'm going to destroy because sin has to be answered. There's the righteousness of God. But I'm also upright in the sense that I will spare. If there is the 50, I will spare. And he works on down this list, and he does so humbly throughout these verses. And again, I'll have to leave that reading up to you. He approaches this very patiently. Suffer me once again. I hate to be a burden, paraphrasing here, but could I ask once again, and finally coming down to verse 32, let not the Lord be angry. Let me speak with this once more. What if 10 should be found? Would you not destroy it if we can find 10? And to that, the Lord went his way. I can only assume that once again, this is a positive answer. If we could find 10, we wouldn't destroy the city. So many lessons there again about that long-suffering nature of God, about his patience, about his merciful attitude here. Yes, I will spare the righteous if ultimately even just 10 can be found. But remember again, I think at lesson 2, why is Sodom being destroyed? It's because of their wickedness, because of their sin. But then also, to me, what yells out the loudest, what a sad commentary on the state of affairs of that time and of that place. Mm-hmm. We know Sodom and Gomorrah and the plain and the cities of the plain were going to be destroyed. What does that tell us? We couldn't find the 10.
Mm-hmm.
That here was a city that not even 10 righteous people could be found in. Friends, I don't know. You know, we talk about righteousness will exalt a nation. We talk about the time of Elijah and the 7,000 that hadn't bowed their knee. You know, who knows whether it's our faithfulness and the good that we strive to do in a community that has allowed it to hold on. Who knows whether it's a small remnant of this nation that would allow it to continue, of this world. But certainly a charge before us. Are we doing what we can to spread the gospel that even 10, as it were, figuratively, could be found in our cities and in our nation even today? And so that's a sad commentary to me when I think about that not even the 10 could be found. Thoughts on 18?
I was thinking back to Genesis 6, 10 couldn't be found then either.
Mm-hmm.
Even those 8 that were saved, you know, that's, I guess, the only 8 that were available that had bowed the knee. We've always been in a minority.
Ooh. It's time has marched on a little faster than I realized. We come to chapter 19. I've simply titled it Sin Destroys.
Mm-hmm.
Those two angels that have appeared unto Abraham come unto Sodom, where Lot is now sitting in the gate. You trace his progression through Genesis. He began camping toward the cities of Sodom. He has moved into the city. Seemingly now he's taken up a place of prominence, governance, even within that city, sitting at the gate. Lot, I would suggest to you, shows both his great hospitality, but also his understanding of the wickedness of the city by inviting those two messengers into his home. He's going to press them. You do not want to stay out here in the city. I think it understands Lot knew what surrounded him. He knew the wickedness of the city in which he lived, that even one night these men would not want to spend out in the city. And that very night, the men of the city are going to come and press Lot, press upon his house to send those men out that they might know them carnally. Nicest way we can put it there. They want to enter into this homosexual act with these men that have come into the city and are willing to break down the door of Lot, as it were, to do this. You even talk about the wickedness maybe that he has become hardened by, that I don't understand Lot. He's going to try to send out his daughters to, as it were, pacify the men that are at his door and to try to protect the two that have come into his house. Yes, I can appreciate him for trying to protect those who's he's taken under his care, but the wickedness that has invaded even into his thinking there to send out his daughters. The angels will ultimately strike the men of the city with blindness in order to deliver and bring safety and tell Lot, we're going to destroy this city. The report we have heard is true. We've seen it ourselves. It's going to be destroyed. And yet, Lot, as he's pleading with his sons-in-laws, he appears unto them as those that are mocking, chapter 19 and verse 14. And so Lot is sadly going to have to leave behind married daughters and sons-in-laws in the city. And it's just Lot, his wife, and his two unmarried daughters that are going to flee out of the city. That's with great urging, verse 16, because Lot was lingering. And then his wife is even going to look back with longing, it seems, in verse 23, and be turned into a pillar of salt. We could certainly think there about where is our heart? Is it set on God and righteousness, or is it in the world? And, you know, there's a lot that I thought we'd have a little more time here. You know, I do want to bring out, I don't see how one can read through this story and think, well, the wickedness here was just that this city was inhospitable. They were inhospitable, but it was because, from everything we can see, they cared more about themselves, their lusts, their desires, than they did about other people. Here, their wickedness was great. This sexual deviancy that deserved death under the law of Moses, Leviticus 18, verse 22, Leviticus 20 and verse 13, that's going to be condemned in the New Testament, Romans 1, verse 26 and 27. Spoken of there as the sins that would keep one out of the kingdom of heaven, 1 Corinthians 6, verse 9 through 11. And even Lot talks about what they're trying to do and accomplish, and he says, calls it wickedness, chapter 19 and verse 7. And, you know, I look at that and I see, you know, Lot was delivered, 2 Peter 2, verse 7 through 8. But he says he was vexed with the filthy conversation, the filthy manner of life of the wicked. He's addressed, verse 8, 2 Peter 2 and verse 8, as a righteous man. But he was dwelling among them and seeing and hearing, and he vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. Even sin is going to bring a great consequence on his life. He didn't participate in it, but it brought his family down. To the point he was going to lose married daughters, he's going to lose his wife, and the chapter ends with an incestuous relationship in his family. And unfortunately, I think we've passed our time. We certainly appreciate you joining us today, and so much more we wish we could have looked at and studied today, but hope that that will encourage you to go back and look through some of these chapters and learn these lessons from them. So we hope that you have a great day.
Amen.